Good morning. I'm Carrie Miller. This is NPR News. We begin this hour with the view of the political junkie about the week ahead in Washington. Hi, Ken. It feels like, even though it's only been 7 days, it's been a year of the news cycle since I talked to you last. It's unreal.
Well, every time I'm on the show, I say, have you ever seen a week like we just experienced?
I know.
And then another week comes, and I say, my goodness, what was I thinking? This is even worse.
Well, have you ever seen, I mean, really, as weeks go, don't you think last week was the most monumental for developments, particularly in this Trump-Russia investigation?
It was. Now, if anybody expects that by appointing a special counsel to oversee the investigation into Russia, which is what the Justice Department did with Robert Mueller, if they think this will accelerate the investigation, they are mistaken, because basically, if anything, it'll almost start from ground zero and take much longer. It may be a more tortured examination into alleged Russian influences in the 2016 election, and what connections, if any, Russian officials have with Trump campaign officials. But the fact is that it has begun. Robert Mueller is I hate to use this word, it almost sounds like a pun, and it's not, but unimpeachable qualifications. And look, the guy knows what he's doing, and Democrats and Republicans have great respect for him.
So, Ken, we should also note, though, that even if Robert Mueller is starting fresh, these congressional investigative committees are going on, and James Comey, it now sounds like, the former FBI director, the one that Trump fired, it looks like he's going to testify shortly after Memorial Day in early June.
Right. That's exactly what it looks like. And it was interesting that for so many Republicans who were dismissing everything James Comey was saying all along, suddenly said, we really want to hear from this guy. We want to hear what he has to say. But you know something, whatever faults there are about James Comey, and I could list many, and I think Democrats and Republicans can list many as well, he did have very interesting insight into his conversations with President Trump, and the fact that President Trump right after he fired Michael Flynn, the national security advisor, he went to Comey and said, look, lay off this investigation. And of course, Comey would say, what are you kidding me? I mean, I'm not going to do anything like that. And so when you think of all the reasons, all the different reasons the White House has given for the firing of James Comey, one of them has to be, one would think, that the fact that he wouldn't go easy on Michael Flynn. And if that's the case, then those familiar words, obstruction of justice, do come into play. Whether it's premature or not, we'll see. But a lot of people are talking about that. John McCain, in an interview, in a sit-down last week with Bob Schieffer, said,
yeah,
hey, we've seen this movie before.
Right.
It sounds very Watergate-ish.
John McCain is also saying, he said on Sunday, that he was appalled and shocked that the president would say to top officials of Russia that he thought the FBI director was a nut job. I mean,
a nut job,
I have to say, the contempt that the president shows for the people around him is just, it's pretty unprecedented, isn't it? It may be the public contempt that he shows.
And I think what you're getting at is that when you think of all the reasons why the White House fired James Comey, well, first it was the Rosenstein report, and then it was, well, because of the way Comey handled the Hillary emails, all those things. And whenever the president would say that or tweet it, his minions, either Vice President Pence or Sean Spicer or anybody else in his communications department, would echo what the president said. Said, well, you know, this is why Comey was fired. And then when Comey sits down with Lester Holt and said, oh, no.
No, Trump sits down with Lester
Holt. The beginning.
Yeah, Trump.
Huh?
You said Comey sat
Trump,
down with Lester. Yeah.
When Trump sat down with him and he said, oh, I planned to fire him all along. Where does that leave Pence and Spicer and everybody else who's been defending him all along?
Oh, my gosh. If you have questions for Ken Rudin about...
I have questions for Ken Rudin.
If you have questions for Ken about the appointment of Robert Mueller, James Comey's upcoming testimony, congressional politics, where Vice President Pence is in all this, that's starting to get interesting. 651-227-6000, 800-242-2828, of course on Twitter, at Carrie NPR. So what would Ken Rudin tell Ken Rudin about what it's like for Vice President Pence these days? Because, oh my, what do you think it's like to work in Trump land, first as the vice president?
Well, you know, I mean, I wouldn't even begin to venture an answer because we've never look, Donald Trump has always been Donald Trump. The way he is as president apparently is the way he's always been as a New York businessman and all that stuff. But when you have the workings of the government, and when you have Republicans who many of whom were elected either pledging loyalty to Donald Trump, support for Donald Trump, or were elected because of Donald Trump, and then you see this person who, in theory, again, it's certainly in theory, could be wrecking the Republican Party and its prospects for 2018 and 2020. I mean, the feelings must be just surreal. I don't know what other word to
Well,
use.
I mean, I also hear, I think, as a subtext from what you've just said, Pence knew what he was getting into. Maybe he didn't know the extent of how cavalier and reckless President Trump would be in some of the things he says to people, but he knew the personality type, right? He kind of knew what to expect.
And the funny thing is one of the reasons Pence jumped the VP is because he was in a losing, or at least about to lose his reelection bid for governor of Indiana. His polls showed him losing to the Democratic
Well,
nominee.
I didn't know
He
that,
was,
Ken. That's interesting.
oh yeah, he was in big trouble.
Ah.
And Trump, of course, said, "Well, I mean, do I want Chris Christie or Newt Gingrich as my running mate? I mean, I don't want anybody rivaling me for attention because God knows I need to have all the attention." So Mike Pence, in many ways, was the perfect choice because Mike Pence is a tr whatever you think of Donald Trump's ideological compass or lack of same. Mike Pence had that. It was a true blue conservative and was from the moment he was first elected to Congress.
Call here from Jackie in Minneapolis. Hi, Jackie.
Good morning.
Hi. What do you want to know from Ken?
I am wondering if collusion, if Mueller finds collusion with the Russians and that it impacted our election, wouldn't it void the election? Wouldn't Pence be out because the election would not be a legitimate election?
Ken, could you see
Well,
an eventuality like that?
absolutely not. And the perfect example is, let's just say whatever Richard Nixon did in 1972, bugging the Democrats, trying to destroy the prospects of first Ed Muskie and then George McGovern, and doing whatever he did. And of course, he was impeached. And well, he wasn't impeached. He was going to be impeached by the House, but he resigned before that happened. That still did not nullify the election. I mean, we still have this democratic process, and Gerald Ford, for better or worse, became president. And so if there was some, if they can prove, if the House, remember the difference between, one of the differences between Nixon and today is, of course, Nixon faced a Democratic Congress. Trump has a Republican Congress, maybe less willing to go along with things like impeachment. But if the Democrats, for example, could win the Montana special election coming up this Thursday, which I don't think they will, but then comes a Georgia election on June 20th. If the Democrats start winning in Republican districts that the Republicans have held for a long time, I suspect the reticence of Republicans in Congress to break away from Trump will disappear. But having but in answer to the question, that Jackie asked 25 minutes ago, no, it would not change the outcome of the election.
Ken, I just saw an interesting statistic pop up here from Brookings, and I think it goes to what you're talking about as Democrats try to figure out some kind of election strategy. Brookings is reporting that African American voter turnout slumped by 7.1% from 2012 to 59.6% total, and it was the lowest for the group since 2000. Now, we know, I mean, I think we were getting bits and pieces of that in the exit polling and in some of the analysis right after the election. Now, Democrats have to look at that and say, how do we reactivate the groups that were supportive of President Obama, that have a stake in whatever comes next, especially in some of these special elections or in the midterms? What
Yeah,
are they
that's a very
talking
good
about
point.
that?
That's a very good point, and I think that that shows that President Obama's role right now is probably more important than ever. It's one thing for Hillary Clinton to have a sit down interview talk about why she lost and James Comey. But I think right now, former President Obama has much more credibility, much more weight within the Democratic Party. And the Democrats are torn about what to do. Do they want to just say that, you know, Trump should be impeached because he's a maniac and he's egotistical and he's, you know, blah, blah, blah. Or should they be talking what voters care about? Like, My health care coverage
right.
could be in jeopardy,
right.
things like that. So I don't think the Democrats actually know which way to go. But the fact is, if you had a 7% decrease in the black turnout in 2016, added to a 5% white increase, it doesn't sound like a lot. But look, Wisconsin, Pennsylvania, and Michigan, three states that went from the Democrats to Trump in 2016, they all were done very, very, very narrowly. So you can say, well, you know, even that tiny turndown, a lessening of black turnout could have very well made the difference.
Here's Jonah Goldberg in the National Review on whether, I think the headline was something like, can President Trump be contained? But it really goes to some of the election strategy that we're talking about. He says, if Trump could simply hold a tune about jobs, tax reform, et cetera, for a few months, his poll numbers would creep up. Some good policy might get enacted. And crucially for Trump, he would earn some political capital that might take the bite out of whatever Mueller finds, if he finds anything at all. Alternatively, keeping his fan base loyal but alienating everyone else is a recipe for staying in the mid-30s for the rest of his term and taking down the GOP majority in the House, which, of course, is what they're very worried about.
Well, look, Donald Trump is Donald Trump. And we always see, like we saw during the inauguration speech, he said, well, he sounds very presidential. We heard that over and over and over again. And then, of course, within minutes, it was the size of the crowd and Hillary really lost. And Hillary is still corrupt Hillary. And so when we saw Donald Trump this weekend in Saudi Arabia, today he's in Israel, I think he's calling for them to build a wall in Israel. But there is a wall there. It's a Western wall, I believe. I don't know. I don't know much about that stuff. But the fact is that everybody kept saying that Donald Trump didn't tweet this weekend, and he sounded disciplined, and he was on message. And, you know, he just, and they said this is exactly what Donald Trump should do. And then yet the next day after something domestically happens, as he called Comey a nut job, or tweeting about what about all the crimes of the Obama and Clinton campaigns, he just can't help himself. And I think Jonah Goldberg does make a good case that if he only had that self-discipline, there's a crying need for a Donald Trump, as we saw in 2016, that a lot has not been done under Democratic presidents. Maybe Trump could do the job, but asking Donald Trump to change stripes, it just seems like it's just a pipe dream.
Here's your mystery newsmaker of the week. You ready?
Uh-oh.
Here we go.
Although this is my first commencement address I have delivered to a actual university, this is not my first commencement speech. The institutions to which I have spoken at previously include Bryman School of Nursing, DeVry Technical School, Debbie Dootson School of Trucking, University of Phoenix, Hollywood DJ Academy, and Trump University.
Ken, you know who that is?
I was waiting for him to announce a discotheque, because that's where I attended. But no, I don't know who that is. I don't know who that is.
That is Will Ferrell giving the commencement address to, I think, University of Southern California.
I love the ones he mentioned, University of Phoenix.
I know. Trump University. And then, Ken, he goes on to say, and I never got a check from Trump University. In fact, I think they wanted me to pay them. Okay, Mr. Junkie Man, I will see you next Monday. Good to talk to you.
The only smile I'll probably have all week. Thanks a lot, Gary.
All right. Ken Rudin with us, as always.